Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Afternoon, you are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. It is a Friday afternoon as I broadcast to you from the state of North Carolina. Pretty pleasant day out there today. No complaints about the weather because I know it's a lot of people living in Hurricane Matthew devastated areas that are still trying to recover. We do have a pretty much a free-flowing program scheduled for you today, although we will be joined by my abolitionist comrade, the lead host and one of the producers, co-producers of New Abolitionist Radio, which is heard on this network every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. But we'll be joined by Max Parthas. Just want to get a field report from him as he recently attended a conference. And we were supposed to talk about it on New Abolitionist Radio, but we had some unexpected yet welcome guests, and the program went into a different direction. So he's going to share that abolitionist news with us today on BTR News, and he will be hanging out with us as long as time will permit for him to hang out with us. Also, one of the questions that I'm asking, and I just thought to add this into today's program, after I was on Twitter, and I saw this black organization, I don't recall the name of it, but it's like a grassroots organization, and they were tweeting out their support for ballot initiatives that would reform the criminal justice system, like reform some of the laws that have pushed people to be in slavery. And my question is, I asked them a question and they never replied. And I said, well, what about all the ballot initiatives in the different states to legalize cannabis? And then that led me to ask the question in general, why are so many so-called, quote unquote, mass incarceration activists and organizations not discussing these state ballot initiatives to end cannabis prohibition? Which, in my opinion, and I think it's not just my opinion, but I think it's supported by the evidence, is that cannabis prohibition is the reason why USA Inc. has the world's largest prison slave labor pool. Most of the people who are in prison and in jail are in there behind something related to cannabis prohibition. And it's just wrong. It's just wrong. And so, why do you want to reform, and I'm just speaking in general, but why do you want to reform how long somebody gets sentenced to slavery for possessing, manufacturing, distributing cannabis when you should just legalize it? There should be nobody going to jail or going to prison behind cannabis when we have all of these different states who have either totally legalized cannabis or have legalized medicinal cannabis. And we talked about some of this on New Abolitionist Radio. But it just got me to thinking today when I saw that tweet. I was like, okay, all right, you got that reform stuff going on there, but what about ending the prohibition of cannabis, which is the number one tool that slave catchers use to put people in prison? And I haven't, and I got to thinking, I was like, all these organizations, I'm just say their names, NAACP, Urban League, many, many more, many so-called activists who are part of the establishment. That's why you see them on CNN and what have you. Why aren't they raising the issue or telling voters in those states that in order for us to strike a blow against, now they call it mass incarceration, but y'all know on this network we call it modern day slavery and human trafficking. But why aren't they telling people, putting out propaganda, placing ads, what have you, to get people to legalize cannabis so that we can, again, strike a very serious blow against the modern day system of slavery in this country? So that's just a question, an open question I want to put out there. Also, later on, if we have time, I'm not really particularly wanting to share this story, but it is a major story, and that is the FBI announcing the reopening of the Clinton email gate scandal, where she hid public records in violation of federal records laws, handled highly classified information in a manner that would be in violation of the Espionage Act, and how they just totally whitewashed that investigation and gave her a pass. So why are they reopening it now? Well, they say because of more emails coming out that perhaps the FBI did not have before, and somehow WikiLeaks got a hold of them, even though they're not citing what new emails they're talking about. And I'm speaking of FBI Director Robert Comey. He's not saying anything specifically, but they're talking about new emails have come to light. Well, of course they came through WikiLeaks. So they're reopening the investigation. And like somebody else stated, too late, too little. It's too late, too little. This investigation is not going to be over in 2 weeks, and it's going to have the same outcome. No indictment, regardless of the evidence. So why is this man playing these games and wasting people's times? So that's what is on tap today. But again, this is Friday. It's going to be a free flow program. The phone lines are open for those who would like to comment on whatever we're discussing, or if you would like to ask me about a news story or my opinion on anything. So before we get started and bring Max on, let me give out the telephone number. I promise you, I'm done with Skype. I tried to use it again. I promise you, I'm done with it. I'm done. I'm not going to pay for something that causes me nothing but problems. So we're just going to use the conference line for now. And I am looking at some different apps, some communication apps that we can use to replace Skype. It's not that the conference line doesn't work, but that's a long number for people to remember. So I want to have a 7-digit number that they can call in. And our 7-digit number is attached to Skype. And I'm not using Skype no more. Why? It don't work like it's supposed to work, and it just makes me angry. So I don't need to be angry while I'm trying to engineer programs. So the telephone number for the conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. And of course, it's *6 and 1 to place yourself in the caller's queue, and then I will bring you on air. One of the things I'm looking at is also being able to allow people to text message us during the programs, during all the programs, for those who are a little bit shy and they don't want to speak on air or what have you, but maybe, you know, they'll share their thoughts through a text messaging system. So definitely looking at that. But without further delay, let's bring on one of my good friends. I consider him a brother, and definitely a comrade in the new abolitionist movement, and that's Max Parthas. Max, thank you for joining us today.
Peace, Brother Scotty Reed. I'm sitting here with my wife, Tribal Rain, who also has shared the experience with me, and we were there as a team, as always, at the Carolina Human Rights Conference.
Okay.
Hello.
Well,
hey, Sister Tribal, good to hear your voice. Well, I just want to thank you both for joining us today. I mean, you have a serious medical emergency that's going on with your family, with your daughter having cancer and receiving that treatment. And y'all could be just worried about your many problems that you have personally, but see, that shows me the character of both of you. You don't have to come on here and talk about other people's problems and talk about modern slavery when you got so much going on. So I just want to just say y'all are an inspiration to me, how much y'all care about other people.
Thank you, Scotty.
Thank you.
Indeed. I know for me, it helps us to manage our own issues when we keep things in perspective. And what's going on here is so much bigger than just my wife and I and our own family. We're literally fighting for the future of our children and our grandchildren so that they don't have to grow up in a world where they can be hunted in the middle of the street and then thrown into a prison for profit and abused. We just can't see that in the future, and somebody's got to do it. If not us, then who? That's what we look at.
Right. And so let's jump right into it. Go ahead and please inform the listeners about the conference that you and Tribal attended, and what was your experience there?
Indeed. In case they didn't know, this is the second human rights conference in the past few weeks that we've been a part of. We have been appealing to these different organizations and groups to finally include an abolitionist perspective within their human rights conference. The way we see it is very difficult to talk about human rights, particularly when it comes to criminal justice, if everybody is already in agreement before they even get to the meeting. So with an abolitionist perspective in the House, it means that there's somebody who doesn't necessarily agree that we should be looking for reform. And it puts abolition on the table as an option that we can include. I was the keynote speaker in Missouri Cure, where we won, New Abolitionists won an award there, making us an award-winning radio program, which is awesome. And just in the past couple weeks, we were at the Carolina Organizing Conference, CHRONIC, Carolina Human Rights Organizing Conference, with Molefi Askari and J.D. Dunlap, who helped to organize this event. They brought in educators, people from law, a judge was there, for instance, giving a workshop. We had educators from Columbia University. We had one of the co-founders of NCOBRA, which is the move towards reparations. We had professors from Asheville's community, a husband and wife team by the name of Professors Mullen, and they had done some research on Asheville that showed as a microcosm how people of color are being treated in that particular community, which was a mind-blowing piece of information that they shared, where I can't quote the exact numbers right off the top of my head, but I believe I remember they were saying how public housing is basically 70% African-American and how people are being pushed out of their communities into these public housings. So we had many educators and many people in criminal justice there, and it was an opportunity for me to be able to address these people and maybe change their mind. Excuse me. And I did my best to do that. It was a weekend long thing. It began on Friday, right? It began on Friday, and it ended on Sunday. Also in attendance there were people from the anti-war organizations. Black Lives Matter was there as well, giving workshops. Also we had folks came in from Standing Rock, including the grandson of Sitting Bull himself, Black Hawk, was there sharing his experiences and his words. So it was some very powerful minds had gotten together to decide that we would talk about different issues. And I'll list some of the issues that were there. Some of the workshops and discussions were there with, for instance, human rights cities, where they're establishing cities that are based on human rights laws rather than the laws of the state itself, where they're focusing on those, where people can gather because human rights are being respected in those particular cities. We talked about educating our children, parents, and their rights, the Black Manifesto, justice in the workplace, and workers' rights was also on the ticket. We had the Ubuntu economic model, where brothers and sisters, these educated brothers and sisters, are getting together trying to figure out how we can establish some kind of economic model that can be duplicated across the country throughout our communities in order to enrich us and establish us more firmly. We had organizing strategies, a struggle for the land, of course, about the Dakota Pipeline. And there was a witnessing and mobilizing the power of conscience, you know, waking people's minds up. And it even had a discussion there on Islamophobia and how that is working. So we had a lot of different discussions. And for me, I think that the abolitionist presentation was the highlight of it all. I say that because at the end of it, when we had our keynote speaker who came and spoke, and that was Brother Onaji Muig, the co-founder of NCOBRA, and right now him and his wife are educators in Columbia University. He started his keynote speech out about abolition. So
Wait a second. Are you talking about the same Onaje Muid who is part of the Black Talk Radio Network broadcast family, although their program has been suspended because they have been doing a lot of work in the field? But he's one of the hosts of Race Treaty that will come on Friday night.
Yes, along with Jerome Benton.
Yeah.
Yes, and we spent quite some time with them. Exactly. He's already part of the family. And I guess over time, and from what we said that day, it influenced him so much that he decided to add it as part of his keynote speech. You know, he was the brother that one of the co-founders of NCOBRA looking for reparations. And I told him, I said, man, I've been waiting 10 years to ask you this particular question. And of course, my question was, if we go and accept reparations now without ending slavery, will that be like a paid in full stamp on our forehead, allowing them to continue to do what they're doing and saying, look, we've already paid you for this and you didn't have any problem with us ending it then, so why should you be telling us about ending it now? And he considered it very deeply, so that was cool.
Yeah, that's one of the questions or one of the points that I would raise about with people that I would speak to in the reparations movement. And I was saying that, well, have you considered that slavery is not over, not legally, not in practice, not in patterns and practices? It's not over. So people are, I consider my brother, my little brother, who was wrongfully convicted on a breaking and entering charge with no evidence, just a white man's word against his, in front of an all-white jury and a white judge, and they made him 10 years a slave, had him working on turkey farms and stuff in North Carolina. I feel he is owed reparations. But again, I also don't tie reparations to slavery. The UN committee that had recently came here and took testimony came out with a report about a week or so ago saying that Black people are owed reparations for racial terrorism in addition to, you know, enslavement.
Yes. That was one of the things that they decided that they would be concentrating more on, is a specific timeline of events to get reparations for, which would leave the door open for other things. As you just mentioned, there's more than one reason why Black people in this nation should be offered reparations, not just for the events of slavery, but Jim Crow and what we call today as mass incarceration.
Right, right. Did Tribal wanted to speak and share her experience with us as well?
She says she's just going to sit here and listen in,
okay,
for the time being. She's been a little bit out of it yet with all the traveling that she's doing back and forth to Greenville for our daughter. So she said she'll chime in if she feels like she's got something that she wants to contribute.
Okay. All right. Completely understandable. So did you have an opportunity to speak?
Yes. They gave me an hour and a half. an hour and a half to speak, and everything that was we spoke about was recorded in its entirety. Tribal and I managed to use our cell phones to record my presentation, which I just put up on New Abolitionist Radio. If anybody wants to see it, it's missing a few parts, but when it does come out, you'll see it in its entirety. When I got there, when I began to speak, the room was filled, as I said, with these people who are educators and professors and leaders who are making differences in their communities as well as nationally. They're also inspiring the minds of young people throughout the nation in different universities, and they already have certain ideas and certain conclusions that they came to. And I asked them to just throw that all out the window from the very beginning and listen to me, and please consider the argument that I was going to present. And I did that and went through the next hour and a half breaking it down. Like the spirit was talking through me, man. I think it was one of the best speeches of my life that I'd ever given. I started out as normally asking if there were any slavery abolitionists who were already there. And I think we had, what was it, about 50% at that time? 50%, which is a testimony in itself.
Wow. Brother,
because it was a time when not one hand would be raised, you know what I mean? So that was a testimony in itself. Half the room was already slavery abolitionists, and by the end of the hour and a half, everybody in that room was a slavery abolitionist, mm-hmm. and including a professor from Columbia who I've been talking to now for years, Martin. And he had always been on the fence, but after hearing us that particular day, it made sense. We showed several clips, video clips, and then I told him about the things that we've been working on, and also some of the ideas that we have and we'd like to get more assistance with that would help to end slavery. So we had to not only convince some people that slavery existed, which we did, but then to show them that there are answers to how to solve this problem legally. There are legal answers that we could go through. So we stressed about what, for instance, Colorado is doing with their initiative to remove the exception clause from their state constitution. We talked about how each state can do the very same thing, and that if they're interested in doing so, they can contact CAPS, Committee Against Prison Slavery, with Brother Lee Woods, who is leading that charge to remove the exception clause from the individual state constitutions. We talked about a constitutional conference where we could take it out of the federal constitution. We told them about the victory that we had over the private prison industries, where we almost destroyed them in one single day, just simply by putting so much pressure on the Department of Justice that they finally had to come out and say, look, we're going to review all of these contracts with these private prisons and phase them out over time. And you remember very well, I believe that was the 18th of August that it happened, and within hours their stocks dropped by 50%, and had it not been for Wall Street stopping trading that day, they would have went out of business that day. So it showed them how close we are to this type of victory.
And I think the thing that convinced them most of all was that when you gave them the figures, when you put it right in their face and showed them the differences between what's going on and the different races.
Yes, I broke down our Ferguson is America report, of course, that we developed on New Abolitionist Radio here on blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I showed them how there is not a state in the union where blacks are not being incarcerated at a much higher rate than their counterparts, regardless of the number of population that blacks represent in those states. We used examples like Vermont, where there's only a 1.2% black population that is being arrested and incarcerated at 12-1 versus a 98.6% white population. And we showed how this is happening all across the country. And also we brought out the figures on the incarceration of our youth and how that's now has become it's a bounty on their heads, where the cost of incarcerating a single teenager can range from $50,000 in Louisiana, which is basically the fast food restaurant of slavery, all the way up to $353,000 a year in New York State, and as what happened with Khalif Browder out there, for instance. Mm-hmm. And that was something that they were not aware of, and it shocked them.
And
so,
being sick to their stomach. In fact, the professor's wife, Dr. Anoji Fly, actually had to leave the room because she was so sick.
Yeah, yes.
The facts that were being thrown at her.
There was a few who broke down in tears, and there was also a few who had to leave the room just shortly because, as she said, she fell sick. They didn't know. And that's the biggest problem, is they didn't know. Nobody's putting this information out there on a large enough scale to make people aware outside of what we're doing and a few other groups. So when they did find out, it literally made some of them sick and some broke down in tears, not understanding.
It is rather sickening, and I can imagine someone having that reaction if they find out for the very first time that slavery was not actually abolished and that you've been lied to all these years by educators, by politicians, by just about everybody, because I'm not ashamed to admit, because there are millions of people like me, but it was only 4 years ago that I came into the knowledge that slavery had not been abolished by simply coming across and reading the 13th Amendment and connecting the dots to what they were calling mass incarceration. And that's when I said, no, this is not mass incarceration. This is the continuation of slavery. So, I mean, I only came to that knowledge 4 years ago. And then that is when I reached out to you and others. I was like, we as a network, as a media platform, we got to get this information out, and the rest is history. I reached out to you. We went through a couple of hosts. Legacy Leonard actually transitioned to be with the ancestors. Erica X was with us for a while, and then now we just have the current panel, where it's you, myself, and Brother Yohanan. So I'm just hoping that they will, people, when they come into this knowledge, that they will do whatever their conscience guides them to do based on their resources and skills to join the abolitionist movement.
Yes, and that was one of the things I tried to impress upon the most. As you said, the rest is history. When a person who has some kind of vehicle or way of putting this information out there and sharing and fighting back becomes aware of this, then it would stand to reason that that would suddenly become your top priority, because a lot of your priorities have to shift now because things weren't what you thought they were. And, you know, we impressed upon them how they, as you said, have been betrayed and misled their entire life by suppressed information and even included into it by participating in it. You know, in many cases, we criminalize our own people. You know, how much of the Black Caucus supported the 1994 crime bill from the Clintons, for instance? Mm-hmm. One of the things that I went into detail on, that 1994 crime bill, I don't think people really understood the depths of what had occurred with the Clintons in 1994 in tandem with a private prison by the name of Wackenhut Corrections Corporation, which is now the GEO Group. When I expressed to them how in just that short period of time, this small company in its initial public offering went from being nobody and just starting on the stock market to being one of the largest privately owned corporations in the entire world. Right now, G4S is the third largest privately owned corporation in the world. It's also the largest private employer on the entire continent of Africa, and that's a prison company where they have Africans enslaving other Africans on behalf of a European prison company. So slavery had went across the world, and I expected it to be overwhelming for them. It always seems to be, and it should be. But now that they know, I see a few of them are moving in the direction of doing something about it, just as we had. Once you find out, you've got to change your thinking about that. And that was one of the things I impressed the most, is language. We have to start calling this thing what it is, slavery. Stop talking about it like it's some kind of mistake or error in judgment over time, but call it what it is, slavery. Instead of saying mass incarceration, say slavery. Instead of saying racial injustice in the courts, say slavery. And the more you say it, the more it's going to get out there, because that's what it is. It's a crime against humanity, which is why I was invited to be a part of this human rights conversation, because this is a crime against humanity that very few know of.
Yeah, yes, sir. Just this morning, I was having a conversation with my mother about the power of words, and we started talking about the term mass incarceration, and she acknowledged that it does not have the same sting in the meaning when you say slavery. And it's not that we're making this up. Slavery does exist. We can show you in law, in patterns and practices from their own, whether we're getting the reports from the corporations themselves and listening in to their earnings calls, you know, we point to the different legislative, like the drug war, that increased slavery. So I think that's very, very important that we use the correct language. Mass incarceration just does not, I mean, it still gives it some sort of legitimacy to me when you say mass incarceration. Oh, these people are locked up because they violated these laws, and just too many people are getting locked up. And that's what I'm hearing from the reform movement. Oh, we're just locking up too many people. No, you are enslaving people. This is slavery, and nobody should be subject to slavery. So those words are very important. But Max, I do need to take a station identification break. I do have some more questions, and I do want to invite our listeners, whether you're on YouTube, TuneIn, Streamer, however you're listening to us, you can get in your questions and comments by giving us a call on our conference line, which is 641-715-3660, participant code 549-032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 to comment. I mean, if it's still unclear to you that it is slavery that we're dealing with, if you have some questions, please, by all means, ask those questions. We will definitely do our best to answer them. And we've been at this for a very long time, putting in countless hours of research. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of Black Talk Radio Network, providing you with new black media for the new millennium. We'll be right back after this quick message.
The Black Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public black radio for the masses.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. This is Scotty Reed broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. I am joined on the phone by my abolitionist comrades. That would be Max Parthas and Tribal Rain. And he and she were just sharing with us some of the things that they witnessed at this human rights conference that they both took part in. Max, I do have a question. When we did our broadcast Wednesday night, at the end of the broadcast, as I was trying to transition to the next radio program, which was the Lotus Place, there was a caller in queue. So while I was in between transitions, I unmuted that person thinking it was one of the hosts or something to let them know, you know, what was going on, and I'll get y'all on air in a couple of minutes. But it was a listener, and he asked a question. And I told him I can't answer that question now because I need more information, and that I had to transition to the next program. So I want us to take a look at the Eighth Amendment, because the question that the caller raised on Wednesday night that we did not get to air, he asked me, couldn't the Eighth Amendment be used to get rid of the 13th Amendment? So for those who don't know what the Eighth Amendment reads, it says that pertinent part of the English Bill of Rights, December 1689, the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution prohibits the federal government from imposing excessive bail, excessive fines, or cruel and unusual punishment. So his question says, can't you get rid of the 13th Amendment since it sentences people to slavery? Shouldn't slavery be considered cruel, if not unusual? Obviously, it is not unusual punishment on this continent, but it certainly is cruel. But one of the things I'm picking up from this is that only prohibits the federal government from engaging in that, although they still engage in it. but it says nothing about the states and what have you. But my answer to him, and I want to get your comment and anybody else who wants to comment on this, is that I'm not so sure if you can use the 8th Amendment to argue that the 13th Amendment should be removed from the Constitution, or at least the exception clause that allows for slavery as punishment for crime. But I feel like the best path is a straight line, and that straight line should point to just getting rid of that amendment. Like, I still getting emails on the amend movement. That's what they're calling themselves, the amend movement. These are the people that want a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United and to get big money out of politics. And so I'm like, well, what about the 13th? That's the amendment that should be first and foremost on people who want to see an end to slavery in this country. But what are your thoughts on his question in using the 8th Amendment to get rid of the 13th Amendment?
Well, it was an insightful question, but I don't think it will work, and I'll explain why. First of all, the 8th Amendment addresses excessive bail and excessive fines, or cruel and unusual punishment. Well, excessive bail and excessive fines is really a matter of perspective. A man like Warren Buffett offered $1 million bail would be like, well, that's nothing. But the homeless guy can't afford it. So excessive bail is really a matter of who it's applying to. Cruel and unusual punishment is universal. But the reason that I say that it probably won't be able to work is because the 13th Amendment takes away your citizenship. And when you become a slave through the 13th Amendment, property of the state, you no longer have rights as a citizen, which is why they can take away your rights to vote, why you can't get any kind of public assistance and public housing. The 13th Amendment is the linchpin to it all. It takes away your rights as the 14th Amendment, from the 15th Amendment, from the 8th Amendment. If you're a prisoner, duly convicted, then you are no longer a U.S. citizen. You are property of the state. So we couldn't apply the 8th Amendment to those who have already been convicted by a jury of their peers, just quoting the Constitution. It could be applied to those who don't make it to be inside of these prison cells, or who haven't been convicted in this 97% conviction rate through plea bargains. It could apply to them before they get to that point. But once you cross that boundary of being a convicted criminal, you lose all your rights after that. You don't have a First Amendment right or anything else. If you had a First Amendment right, we would be hearing more from these prisoners about the prison work strike right now. So all your rights are lost because of the 13th Amendment. And I think that's the way that it was designed.
I would also say that sometimes that leads to lifetime punishment as well, whether we're talking about voting rights, whether we're talking about gun ownership rights, whether we're talking about rights to access public services that you are still paying for because you're still paying taxes and what have you. So one of the things that stood out to me, though, as you was citing the 13th Amendment about being duly convicted. So I looked up that word, and the definition of duly is in accordance with what is required or appropriate following proper procedure or arraignment. Nowhere in this does it talk about justice, you know, those who have been justly convicted instead of wrongfully convicted. So again, words are very powerful, man, and these people have been masters at using words to spread confusion, to manipulate laws and all kind of stuff, man. It's just very disgusting.
Indeed. And it was a 1-2-3 punch when they did it. They knew exactly what they were doing in order to disenfranchise this entire population of black people who had recently been freed. If you read the 14th Amendment, for instance, it says the 14th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified on July 9th, 1868, and granted citizenship to all persons born or naturalized in the United States, which included former slaves recently freed. So it included those who were affected by the Emancipation Proclamation, but the moment that you became incarcerated again, you lost all of those rights. Due to the 13th Amendment. We're right back to being state property. And that's how we got involved with the black codes and convict leasing, which continued to do that for the next 150 years till we see ourselves in a position now where nearly, I believe it's close to 10 million people can't even vote right now.
Another thing I was thinking about in terms of justice in versus duly convicted or justly convicted, and then also the question that caller had raised on Wednesday night about cruel and unusual punishment. I started thinking about the recent article that said that President Obama, CEO of USA Inc., just recently commuted the sentences of about another 100. And you talked about this on New Abolitionist Radio and correctly stated that just represents a drop in the bucket as opposed to how many people who are daily being made new slaves. And so I agree with that. But one of the things I pay attention to their language when the White House puts out a press release on these commutations or anything like, I never hear them say, well, we're doing this because those sentences were cruel and unusual. You know, I haven't seen them mention anything like that.
No, I haven't seen it either. And you're right, Scotty. They were talking about how they're going to release 6,000 people coming up soon. And I did note that we released about 650,000 people a year. And you divide that throughout the year, that's basically 1,790 people a day around that number. So that means that in 3 days, they'll replace what they released. So it sounds good on paper, 6,000 people. Anytime you're talking about 6,000 people being freed, it sounds fantastic. But when you think that in 3 days they'll replace that number, it takes away a lot of that excitement about what is occurring.
It most certainly does. Continuing on, speaking about cruel and unusual punishment, did you see the story where this federal judge has refused to send women to a Brooklyn jail that she says it has third world conditions? Had you heard about that?
No, sir, I have not heard about
that. I had not
yet.
Either. This article was actually published by John Marzulli on October the 7th of this month. So it escaped me, and I just came across it today. So let me just read a little bit from the New York Daily News. It says a federal judge said she is reluctant to remand female defendants to the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn in light of unconscionable conditions found at the jail. Brooklyn Magistrate Judge Cheryl Pollock ordered that the representatives from the U.S. Bureau of Prisons and the Brooklyn U.S. Attorney's Office appear in her courtroom on October the 27th for a hearing on what is being done to fix the problems. That would have been yesterday. So I'm going to have to do some digging to see what they came up with at this hearing that took place yesterday that I don't know anything, didn't know anything about. She says, I would like to get to the bottom of this before I remand anyone to MDC. Pollock said, some of these conditions wouldn't surprise me if we were dealing with a prison in Turkey or a third world country. It's hard for me to believe it's going on in a federal prison. Her comments were made at what would normally have been a mundane hearing for Anna Espinosa, who is facing jail time for violating the conditions of her supervised release on a 2013 drug conviction. She said despite Espinosa's conduct, she is more troubled by the conditions at the MDC cited in a recent report by the National Association of Women Judges. The report blasts the Sunset Park facility. The report obtained by the Daily News states that unconscionable conditions found at the jail during a visit in 2015 remain so to this day. And you can read this article. Just do a Google search. A judge refuses to send women to Brooklyn jail and that with third world conditions. And I'm like, has she never been in a jail before? I mean, this is pretty much common. from the years of reporting that we have done on the conditions of jails and prisons, the information that the prisoners themselves have been able to get out to the public about the mold and maggots in the food and lack of medical care, which is some of that is cited in this report. So I'm like, where has this woman been all this time to think this is pretty much normal in the United States? Wouldn't you say, Max?
Yes, I would say it is pretty much normal. Here in South Carolina, we've already had investigations into our prisons for cruel and unusual punishment and the living conditions in which people were placed into, particularly in those with mental disabilities. We've also reported on many occasions in other prisons much the same, like in Mississippi, where the judges came in there, saw the juvenile detention facilities and called it a cesspool of unconstitutional violations. But, excuse me, the fact that judges are waking up that this type of environment exists and that every time somebody comes into their courtroom, they are potentially sentencing them to death, because that's possibly what you're doing, sentencing them to death or to cruel and unusual punishment, is a big thing. Right? If they're waking up to these conditions, that's great. We reported, you and I and Johanna before, our other judges who have retired since. I remember we told the story of one who spent 17 years as a judge and now is a human rights advocate talking about these very same conditions that people live in. It is normal, Scotty, but that is the shame of it all. It is too normalized. Everything we're dealing with is normalized. When we talk about 2.5 million people being in prisons, for instance, which is a small number compared to what the total is, people just blink and keep it moving. It was one of the things that I mentioned at the Carolina Human Rights Organizing Convention, is that even the people who were in the room with me at that moment, listening to everything that I said and in 100% agreement, are going to face cognitive dissonance at some point where they're going to decide that what they want to do is continue to believe the lie because it's safer and it doesn't put them into emotional or mental turmoil trying to struggle with this reality. So I believe some of the people who heard me that day walked out, had it in their mind, and by next week, they would be going right back to mass incarceration.
Well, I guess it takes some time for some people to retrain their brain, you know, because they have been programmed with this corrupt data for so long. It's just not an easy transition for some people. It was easy for me. Once I read the 13th Amendment, I quit calling it. I started calling it slavery. I mean, I was in shock that, not shocked that it's still going on, because it made so many things I was seeing out there make sense. But I was just shocked that they have been able to get away with this lie for so long. And the National Association of Women Judges report concluded that the Bureau of Prisons had failed to address the problem cited in the 2015 and 2016 reports. And this part right here really gets me, because we're talking about human beings who are suffering under horrid conditions of slavery. But she went on the NAWJ, that's the National Association of Women Judges report, said that unlike 2015, so this is from the 2016 report, says unlike 2015, where there seemed to be some energy in the group, the impression was that these women in June 2016 had all but given up hope that things would get better. The lethargy was almost palpable. So it's a lot of people, man, who are just hanging on by a string for hope, man. And I'm just feeling for them right now.
Indeed, sitting in these cages and cells, unjustly incarcerated for reasons that have nothing to do with anything that they've personally done, like these war against drugs where people are being sent into prison. I believe it was the report we had was 575,000 people last year alone arrested, incarcerated over petty possession crimes. So they're sitting there looking at 10, 15, 20 years without any hope, wondering who's fighting for them and how can they ever get out. You know, not everyone can be Daryl Padgett, the brother that we reported on here in our 21st century writer of the Underground Railroad who was able to study law and get himself out. Many just lived out their lives in these prisons, caught up in this system with no hope whatsoever. And that's one of the reasons why I'm very happy to see that we have this prison strike where the prisoners themselves are fighting back against the system, trying to draw attention to the plight that we're dealing with here now. I mentioned earlier that we often say 2.4, 2.5 million people are in prisons, but that's a low number, and it's only using one area of incarceration. You're only talking about prisons. But the total number of people going through our prison industry and our criminal justice system is 24 million people a year. That's a whole different number now than 2.5, and it's a much bigger number than 2.5 million. 24 million people a year going through our justice system every single year.
And I would add that even if they do not end up on a prison plantation for a considerable amount of time, they still, like we know, most of the court cases end up in plea deals, and they will be stripped of their rights all the same, whether they see the prison plantation or not. They will just be primed, like the young lady they were speaking about who got caught up on a 2013 drug possession charge. Here it is 3 years later, and she's still at risk of being made a slave.
Wow. You know, one of the other things that we did at this conference was I managed to convince everybody to sit down and watch the 13th. We had Netflix on our computer, and we had a screen there for it. So late one night, after we were done towards the end of the event, we all sat down and watched The 13th by Ava DuVernay. And, you know, I'm not saying that The 13th is the end-all, be-all when it comes to explaining what's going on, but it makes a direct connection between the 13th Amendment and what we see today in modern-day slavery and human trafficking.
Would you say, because we did a review, which a lot of people watched on YouTube, but we did a special broadcast the night that it was released, and we just did our little critique of the film, and certainly it could have been better, but I agree with you that it's better than anything that's in the mainstream right now. But would you say it's accurate that the film implies that slavery was never abolished instead of just outright saying it?
Yes, that's probably the best word that you could use for it, is implies, because they never literally come out and say it, which is why I said that the people who are talking are lukewarm. They don't want to go over the line. They don't want to pass the mass incarceration stage and go right into slavery. Even at one point, we heard Michelle Alexander say some ridiculousness, like maybe we should consider downsizing our prison population, as if she was talking about a layoff of people. So they find it very difficult to go into the slavery aspect. But Ava DuVernay, just by putting together as the focal point 13th Amendment, was able to show that there is a connection there. Even though we don't have enough people who are speaking out on that level, where we could bring them in as and say, look, this is where it's at. So, yes, I think it made a direct connection, and I think that was her point right there to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I thought it was very important just to, because all it took for me, Max, was actually reading the 13th. And I think it was 2 points in the film. I know at the end of the film it did show the 13th Amendment text in its entirety. Now, Grant, mind you, this is something they wouldn't even do when they had their little anniversary of the 150th year since the passing of the 13th Amendment, and had their little, you know, gathering there in Washington, D.C. With Congress members and others, and didn't even have not a banner, not a poster, not nothing that showed the text of the 13th Amendment. And I think that was on purpose. So at least she did show the text of the 13th Amendment. And maybe for some, when they read that and it, read that word "except," then that light bulb will go off in their head just like it went off in mine.
Indeed. And I think one of the other things that she showed very clearly is criminalization of blacks. She showed how using the 13th Amendment, switching to convict leasing, the new tactic was to criminalize black people as a whole. So you could put them into these prisons and jails and not be able to distinguish them from the murderers and the rapists and the real criminals. So the black man or woman who was on the corner and got arrested for vagrancy was put in with career criminals, murderers, rapists, and so on and so forth. And at one point, I guess even today, we see what happens with that. When you put these innocent people into a situation where they're surrounded by actual criminals, they themselves start becoming institutionalized. They themselves may end up becoming violent people. They themselves learn these how to live in a criminal environment amongst criminals. So when you let them out, they learn a whole new skill set of skill set now.
Right, and they're sometimes, I would say, irreparably damaged psychologically, mentally, and physically. If you come out of there with AIDS or Hep C or something like that, yeah, man. So I'm going to take an early break. Max, okay. if you can hang on, I appreciate it. But I want to turn the conversation to something that is just it's not really boggling my mind, but for lack of a better word, I'm just mystified that these although NAACP does bill itself as a civil rights organization, but any of these organizations that claim they're out there fighting to reform the system, reform criminal justice, and reduce the, like you say, downsize the prisons and what have you, why aren't they mentioning the various states that have cannabis legalization on the ballot? And there's plenty of evidence to show that in those states that have legalized, it has reduced the victims of slavery drastically. Did it end slavery totally? No, it did not. But it in terms of cannabis, which is the number one charge, the number one charge that the slave catchers used to start the slavery process, or processing someone into it, you know, you would think that these people would be pointing out all the different states and paying for campaign ads and what have you to point out that, hey, we could strike a blow against modern slavery on a state level by just passing cannabis legalization and showing them the evidence that shows, like, for example, in Colorado, 94% reduction in cannabis charges. So, we want to talk about that on the other side. Again, if you have any questions, if you have any comments about what we're talking about here today, even if you don't see it eye to eye with us, hey, you can still call in and share your opinion with us, because maybe somebody else, we might ask that question and we know, and then we'll know how to answer it. Okay, so give us a call. That telephone number is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound, and of course dial hit *6 and 1. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. I'm on with my abolitionist comrade Max Parthas and his wife Tribal Rain, also an abolitionist, has been chiming in as well, and we will continue this conversation on the other side.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. And let me clarify something. I do not expect CNN, MSNBC, PBS, or any of those platforms to be leading any kind of conversation on this issue of cannabis legalization. I don't expect Van Jones to do anything on CNN other than push Hillary Clinton for president. That's all I, and attack Donald Trump. That's all I expect from them. But when it comes, because we have social media, because we have the internet, because many of these organizations have their own platforms and email lists and what have you, I'm just very, very disappointed that there is silence coming from these people, coming from these organizations on these ballot initiatives to end cannabis prohibition. Max, what are your thoughts?
Well, personally, as I mentioned yesterday to our group and moved to abolish 21st century slavery, it's time for an abolitionist summit. We need some real leadership in this matter who can start bringing these disparaging groups or different groups together to fight for causes like this and to mobilize and go out there and handle situations like that. We need a voter mobilization on these issues. And we don't, as you said, there's nobody out there doing this. And I also noticed two things in particular that may explain why no one is out there really pushing hard on this. One, there's never really any discussion about freeing people. Like, you hear all of these different discussions on mass incarceration, but nobody talks about actually letting people go, which is our top priority, getting a million and a half people out of these prisons and then preventing the hunting of further people to put right back in, as we spoke about earlier, where the release is 6,000 and in 3 days that number will be replaced. So we want to get these people out. You don't hear this conversation. That's the first thing. And secondly, marijuana decriminalization is one of those things where they have convinced the communities themselves that this is something that is wrong, that if you go to jail for smoking some weed, you shouldn't have been smoking no weed. You're 19, you're 25, whatever it may be, you're the one that's wrong. Where we've been smoking marijuana, cannabis, now for 5,000 years as a society, and suddenly you got to send us to prison for it, for smoking $10 worth of marijuana. And then you look right around at the different states that have legalized, and you see how much of a benefit it has become for the state itself, where states like Colorado were able to reinvest $80 million from the profit into the schools. So those are some of the things you never hear. And then finally, one of the things you really never hear is the decrease or the reduction of the number of police in our society. We've got like a million police, and you never hear anybody say, well, we don't need a million. We maybe need 500,000. Or 400,000, particularly if you're going to end these laws on marijuana illegalization. So if you're going to end those, that's 575,000 people right there who will never see a cop to arrest them. Mm-hmm. You don't need that many police. So I think there's a number of reasons why, Scotty, and those three that I just mentioned to you would be some that I would like for people to consider.
Now, I do want to acknowledge two organizations who have been putting this information out, because that's how I found out the information, and that is the organization led by former slave catcher who has totally repented and in a tearful apology said, I just didn't know what I was doing to my people. And I'm talking about Neil Franklin, a black man who was a police officer and then later worked with the Maryland, a captain in the Maryland State Police. Now he leads the organization called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, which is made up of former slave catchers, former plantation overseers, former judges, former criminal attorneys, and what have you. So they have been putting that information out through their email list and through their website. The other one, I don't know if they are a 501c3 or a state nonprofit, but that's stopthedrugwar.org, stopthedrugwar.org, which is a great source of information for everything concerning the drug war, including the slave catchers getting caught misbehaving or what have you. So I do want to acknowledge those two organizations that stopped the drug war, as well as Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Now, Mr. Neil Franklin has been on these corporate platforms in the past to speak about you know, for example, the Baltimore report or the Ferguson report, or when they're having a conversation about policing, they will bring him on or what have you. But I haven't seen him on there, invited on there recently to push what his organization is pushing, and that's cannabis legalization in the states that have it on the state ballot. So shout out to Neil Franklin, all those people who volunteer their time to speak on these issues. I've had a number of them as guests on this program over the years. But what about these other organizations? See, I'm subscribed to a whole bunch of different organizations, whether I belong to them or not. I'm not hearing anything from the NAACP. I'm not hearing anything from the Urban League. I'm not hearing anything from the NAACP Legal Defense Fund on this issue. I'm just not hearing it. I mean, you name it, I'm not hearing it. The so-called progressive organization called Move On, which is funded by George Soros, the billionaire investor. I'm not seeing this, man. And it just gives me cause for pause and wondering what's going on here. Had a, like, for example, when you have an NAACP that takes money from Wells Fargo or any other corporation that's involved in 21st century slavery and human trafficking, that makes me believe that's why you're not speaking on it, because your paymasters have forbidden you to. It's just very frustrating, Max.
Well, let's just look at what the legalization of marijuana would do to the prison population. As we spoke about earlier, 575,000 people went into prisons and jails last year just for simple possession. We release about 650,000 people per year. We incarcerate a little bit more than that, more or less, about the same thing. So if 575,000 are going in for petty possession, and we're putting in $650,000 for crimes overall, $650,000 for crimes overall, that leaves you more, a little more than 100 and some thousand people going in every year. Think about how quickly the prison population would decrease. Within a matter of 4 years, you would be down to a percentage of what you had originally had.
I mean, that would kill the private prison corporations right there. By itself,
yes, it would.
That would kill them.
By itself, it would kill them.
USAtoday.com did publish an article today talking about the cannabis ballot measures on Election Day. So let me just read a little.
Live on Red Bull TV.
Give me just a second. It started up an ad.
Let's
see if I can stop it. Okay, there we go. All right. So, yeah, USA Today published an article in its Election 2016 section. Let me see if we can actually hear from them.
The trees. Small patches that make up California's pot production mecca.
A lot of people came here for a different way of life.
Okay, that's not a piece of propaganda I want to play. Let me just read from the article. It says, nearly 60 million Americans may wake up November the 9th to find voters in their states have abolished long-standing cannabis prohibitions, a threefold expansion for legal cannabis across the country. Another 24 million Americans could find themselves in states with newly legal medicinal cannabis use, a smaller but still significant expansion of legalized pot around the United States. Already, half of the states permit some form of medical cannabis use, and more than half of all Americans live in a state that has approved medicinal cannabis. California, experts say, will likely play the most significant role in cannabis legalization on November the 8th. Voters in the most populous state are widely expected to approve the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, adding nearly 40 million names to the list of people who live in a state with legal cannabis. Lawmakers see cannabis taxes as a source of new revenue to close budget gaps, while entrepreneurs are considering the business case, with potentially billions of dollars in profits possible from this fast-growing made-in-America industry. So it goes on to name the states. Max had named them on Wednesday night on New Abolitionist Radio. I'll restate those here. Arizona, California, Maine, Massachusetts, and Nevada are considering legalizing recreational cannabis. Voters in Arkansas, Florida, Montana, and North Dakota are asking voters whether to permit medical use for certain conditions like cancer or chronic pain. None of those votes will change the federal ban on cannabis use, although legalization advocates say it may further pressure Congress, the DEA, and the FDA to act. How about the CEO of USA Inc., who has it within his power? He don't have to go ask permission from no one. No one. He has within his power, with the power of the pen, to remove cannabis from the DEA schedule list of drugs. This solely falls under the executive branch of government. And so again, with him getting all this publicity and slaps on the backs and pats on the heads and kudos and all of that for these 6,000 people who will be released from slavery because he commuted their sentences. Again, like Max already said, they'll be replaced in just 3 days with new slaves. So I feel like if this, let's just say all of those states that I named, whether it's recreational use or medicinal use, man, I would feel like that would put a lot of pressure on him, even though he still don't have to do anything. But it would put pressure on him to at least do that before he leaves office January the 20th. I'm not betting whether he will or not, because I don't trust anything that comes out the man's mouth. But Max, your thoughts?
I don't believe he's going to do anything about it. I think that he's been part and parcel of the problem throughout the past 8 years, all the way up until 2012. Criminal justice reform wasn't even a part of his conversation. We've listened to the State of the Union addresses, and as I said, as far back as that, just a few years ago, criminal justice reform was not even in his State of the Union address. It didn't exist for him. He's never said the words private prison, for-profit prisons. That doesn't come out of his mouth. He's worked hand-in-hand with these for-profit prison companies to make their business models much larger. If you remember, when the immigration so-called crisis occurred, we were reporting on New Abolitionist Radio that they were about to close those facilities near the border because they didn't have enough people to fill them. And then suddenly all of these immigrants started coming in based on a rumor that they would be able to get citizenship if they could just spend some time in these facilities. And suddenly we had this overwhelming number of women and children and families that were being put into these immigration detention centers. And the very first thing that the president did was give $3.7 billion to these private prison industries. So I believe that he's been working hand in hand with them all along, and nobody can convince me otherwise, because I have seen him and I had it on video where he sat and explained how the Emancipation Proclamation was not really something that freed the slaves, and how the 13th Amendment allowed it to go on, in a conversation he had with students. I believe it was out in a university. I forget which university he was speaking of, but he knows what's going on, and he's been participating in it. So I don't expect much from him.
I don't either, but we still will be putting pressure on him until he leaves office and the next CEO takes place, because it doesn't matter if it's Trump or Clinton. When they are, what do they call that, on inauguration day, when they are sworn in as CEO of USA Inc., slavery will still be the supreme law of the land. So regardless of who it is, we're still, as abolitionists, are going to have to fight that person. Because the trick is, as we have identified, the trick is this reform stuff. And as you and Johanna often say, you can't reform slavery. You have to abolish it.
Reforming slavery is what got us where we are today. They reformed it to convict leasing. They reformed it to the chain gangs. They reformed it to Unicor. The one thing that always remained constant, though, was the constant hunting and incarcerating of people across the United States, in particular people of color. That is something that has remained constant, including the exploitation of their free labor and the exploitation of their families and themselves through exorbitant prices, fees, and fines that they can barely afford. Most times they can't afford. Many times, in order to deal with just the bail system alone, people will give up their homes and their rent and not eat, and things like that, just to pay the bail, like for Sandra Bland, who was arrested for not using a turn signal while a cop was tailgating her and ended up with a $5,000 bail. So, yeah, that is the case as I see it.
I do have a press release that I would like to share briefly. We had Karen Zhao on as a guest on BTR News recently. She wasn't the same one we had on New Abolitionist Radio. I'm sorry. But Karen Zhao is with the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, NYC. And they put out a press release in regards to the Bronx 120. And it said that today is the 6-month anniversary of the largest quote unquote gang raid in NYPD history, in which 120 young men were kidnapped from their homes in the North Bronx on April the 27th. Disturbing information has come to light about the treatment of the Bronx 120, most of whom have been held in federal prison without bail, awaiting trial, and the plea deals they're being forced to take. Reflecting on today, a young man kidnapped from this raid stated, "I wake up every morning still in shock that I am being federally prosecuted." Many of the Bronx 120 have been severely mistreated during this pretrial period. Again, they haven't been convicted of anything. They are getting tear gassed inside their cells, serving long stints in solitary confinement, getting shot with rubber bullets while inside their cells, being denied access to commissary and weekly visits from family for as long as they have been incarcerated, being forced to sleep on the floor without a mattress, denied proper physical and mental something's missing here. I'm sorry. Okay, now I can see it. Denied proper physical and mental health care, and otherwise physically assaulted. These concerns are familiar to those of us who are keeping up with the ongoing national prison strike, around which imprisoned individuals are making human rights demands through nonviolent direct action. You can read the rest of that in our abolitionist group on BTR. community.com. I just wanted to mention that before we end today's broadcast, but the victims of the Bronx 120 raid were arrested on federal RICO charges, some of them for simply knowing an alleged gang member. Evidence of these alleged relationships were derived partly from social media such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That just goes right in line with them using those platforms, using the CIA front company, Geofedia, to track not only just people in general, but activists specifically. So just wanted to share that. But the reason I wanted to share that, Max, is, again, here's RICO being used, misused against these young men. While we pointed out with that Ferguson report, which did cite violations of federal laws, that the relationships that these city managers and city councils have with the slave catchers department and with the courts, that they should be indicted on federal RICO charges.
Yes, we've been pushing for that for some years now, a couple of years now, and we've seen some fruits from those labors as well, because there are organizations that have been suing the prisons, for instance, under RICO charges. Mm-hmm. And here they are using them against children in our communities, criminalizing those kids just through association on RICO charges. If you have a tattoo, you're a gang member, and you can be charged with RICO charges and sent to prison for nothing more than having a tattoo.
Tell you, man, people need to wake up, and they need to stop thinking just because we have people in this system who look like the victims, that they are trying to do what they can to end this evil system, because they're not. They're just trying to, in my opinion, delay its downfall. and it's going to fall. I'm going to speak that into existence. It's going to fall. It may not be today. It may not be tomorrow. It may not be next month. It may not be next year. But it will fall. It will not
Indeed
stand.
It will, brother.
So, Max,
if I didn't believe so, yeah, I wouldn't be here today. Mm-hmm. In the closing segments, I just want to say thank you to Malefia Ascari, J.D. Dunlap, all the people who participated in Chronic 2016. That's Tribal Rain yelling out there. All the people who participated in it, I see a bright future because of people like that who will now take this information that they've garnered and take it back to their students and their alumni and to their colleagues and start sharing it and working on it. This is how the word spreads and how change comes about. And I'd also like to remind people that all the rights that we discussed here on this program today are rendered null and void once you become a prisoner of state property enslaved under the 13th Amendment. You're no longer a citizen, but are legally an enslaved person and property of the state. This is why these rights are violated all day, every day. It's impossible for someone to stand there and tell me that we have a Sixth Amendment right, which guarantees us fair and speedy trials by a jury of our peers, and in the same breath, say that 97% of all people going before those judges never even get a trial. They go straight into prisons through plea bargains. So these rights are violated all day, every day. And I also like to remind people, as Scotty was saying earlier, that if we were to just legalize marijuana possession, for instance, just make that legal, you would see a decrease in the number of prisoners that would be somewhere upwards of 70%. So that would lead to a decrease in the police population, and just those two things alone would provide somewhere around $50 billion a year in accessible resources that we could use to rebuild the lives and communities that we have destroyed every day along the way.
Well, again, thank you, Max, and Tell Tribal, thank you as well. I know that you're going through a tough period right now with the health issues that one of your daughters is having. But again, as I stated at the beginning of the program, that really speaks to you all's character, that you have this health crisis going on in your family, but you're still taking time out to work against slavery and bringing about its end. So thank you again to you and Tribal Rain and your entire family.
Thank you, Scotty. And if anybody would like to help us out, because, you know, not only is it we're dealing with the health crisis with our daughter facing this life or death situation, but we recently lost our house to the flood just last year, and then we're flooded again this year. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to find a new place to live. So if you want to help us out and donation-wise, you can send donations to prismaticdreams@gmail.com, spelled PRYSMATIC, dreams, plural, @gmail.com. We appreciate any help at all via PayPal.
All right.
Thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate you giving me the time to be able to share our experiences from Chronic 2016. Well, God bless, brother.
God bless you as well. All power to the people.
All power to the people.
All power to the people.
All right. You all have a blessed day. Okay. That was, again, our comrades, Tribal Rain and Max Parthas, new abolitionists working to bring about the end of modern day slavery and human trafficking. Again, if you have not read the 13th Amendment, please go read the 13th Amendment. Go read it. It's not very long and it's not very complex. And you do have to know the definition of words, but I think most people know the definition of the word except. Okay, that means there's an exception. So when the 13th Amendment says we abolish slavery except as, they're making an exception for slavery. It says it right there in plain English, right there in the U.S. Constitution, supreme law of the land, is codifying slavery. And it's not going to end itself. It's not going to end itself. But I would say to people out there who are wondering, well, what can I do? You may think that you don't have a lot of resources. You don't know a whole lot of different people who are connected to the political system or anything whatsoever. What can you do? Just tell people about the 13th Amendment. Tell them slavery was never abolished. Change the language. Don't call them police. Call them slave catchers. All right, don't call them law enforcement officers, because what they are enforcing is slavery. Call them slave catchers. These the slave patrols. This isn't community policing. This is slave patrolling. Just change your language. Don't call it mass incarceration. Call it slavery. Words are important. Mass incarceration is some watered down, politically correct term that makes it, I guess, more palpable for people to digest. No. Give them the bitter pill of truth. And what is that truth? That slavery was never abolished, that Abraham Lincoln was a despicable liar and a racist, and we have to finish the job that was set out to be done by the abolitionists who came before us. The work still has to be completed, and we welcome everyone to join again. You don't have to be the smartest person in the world. You don't have to be a millionaire. You don't have to have all of these vast resources to make a difference. Just sharing truth with people in your immediate circle, you'll be surprised at how far that will go. Okay? It will go very far. Because people got to recognize a problem and analyze it properly before we can come up with a solution. If we misdiagnose and then calling it mass incarceration, then we think, we just don't need to lock up so many people. I mean, we need to keep locking them up, but just not so many. Yeah, y'all just getting outrageous with it. No. We need to end slavery. No one should be subjected to slavery. Even those, I would say, who have committed violent crimes. I don't think they should be subjected to slavery. No, that's not going to rehabilitate anyone or make the situation or make crime go away. So we must not make excuses for slavery. All right, I do have one more story that I said I was going to cover. I really don't care because nothing is going to change. But the FBI has renewed or reopened its investigation into Hillary Clinton's secret email server. Director James Comey told Congress in a new letter today that heightening the stakes for the Democratic presidential nominee with less than 2 weeks before Election Day. Mr. Comey said his agents learned of new emails pertinent to their probe while working on an unrelated case. He said his agents need to review those messages to see whether they contain classified information and whether they affect his previous decision. Who is this guy killing? Fooling? He ain't fooling nobody. If anybody think that all of a sudden he had a change of heart and he's going to practice justice and uphold the law that she broke, that he laid out a great case for showing us how she broke it, but then he just said, well, we're not going to recommend criminal charges because we don't have any proof she meant to break the law. So, I mean, that's like a whole new standard. I mean, wow. Can I use that in defense of anything that I might get charged with? If I go out here and let's say, and it's not going to happen, but let's just say a drunk driver out there. I don't think drunk drivers mean to kill anyone. It just happened as a result of loss of motor functions from using alcohol and driving. Okay? I don't think they meant to kill anyone. So, I mean, why don't they get the Hillary Clinton treatment then? She wasn't aware that she was breaking the law, so we're not going to charge her with a crime. I'm just so... And another thing that bothers me about this whole election fiasco is that we got grown people, and some of them way older than me, who are so bought into this game that they're playing. They're so bought into this rigged process that you listen to the words that come out of their mouth, it makes no logical sense whatsoever. they will act like, oh, I don't care about her breaking laws. Who cares about people breaking laws and what have you? Well, apparently, a lot of people care about laws being broken, or we wouldn't have the largest prison population on the face of the planet. But most of the people that's locked up, as we just talked about with Max, are in there for victimless crimes, things that are only crimes because crooked politicians determined that if they pass this law, make this a criminal offense, we can then target these formerly enslaved Africans and make them slaves again. We go to the modern drug war, where Nixon, chief of staff, said that they started the drug war to target black people in anti-Vietnam War protesters. So again, you know, half of the stuff that's on the books shouldn't even be on the books, should not even be crimes. A crime to me is when you've harmed another individual. In this case, Hillary Clinton harmed the intelligence capabilities of USA Inc. Not that I care. I'm glad she did it. Anything that will speed up the dissolution of this corporation, I'm all for. I make no secret about I want to see USA Inc. dissolved. It is a corporation. We can dissolve corporations. Let's dissolve this corporation and then create a new nation that is actually based on liberty, freedom, and justice for all. So I don't expect anything to change. He's going to already saying, well, you know, we can't tell you how long this new investigation is, or this new part of the investigation is going to take. It's going to take well after Election Day. And this woman has already been selected. She has already been selected. I will be shocked if Hillary Clinton on November the 9th is not the new CEO elect of USA Inc. I will be shocked, I tell you. I really will be. And once that occurs, well, good luck trying to indict a sitting chief executive officer of this empire. It's not going to happen. So I thought I would share that story, but it's really not that important because nothing's going to change. She's going to continue to be above the law. Anyway, that is my program for today. Coming up here in about 29 minutes will be Tando Radio Show. He will continue on with the topic of cyber warfare and what have you, and also global nuclear war one. So make sure y'all keep it locked right here on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com on our digital radio station, Black Talk Radio. You can find us on many different platforms, but just Google Black Talk Radio will be the number one result, and you'll find all the different ways that you can tune in to the stream. Also, the Black Media crowdfunding Black Media campaign, that's ongoing. Just sent out a couple of shirts today. If you want a Black Radio Matters t-shirt, more importantly, find out why black radio stations, we have to make them matter again, because they played a tremendous role in getting information out to people during the civil rights / black power movement. And in 1996, again, those darn Clintons working with Republicans, it was a bipartisan affair. In the 1996 Telecommunications Act, it allowed corporations to own up to 8 different radio stations in the same market, and they just basically squeezed out black radio, who could not compete with them. So we have a plan through the Black Talk Media Project to restore what we have lost, but in a different form. So you can help contribute to that effort by going to blacktalkmediaproject.org or blacktalkradionetwork.com, and you will find the different ways that you can donate, but most importantly, find out why you should support the creation and distribution of independent black media. All right, you should recognize the fact that slavery was never abolished. It is the supreme law of the land. What we see going on isn't policing, but it's slave catching. And if you do not want to become a new slave, then what you should do is develop battlefield skills, battlefield awareness, defensive living skills, so that you do not easily become a new slave on a prison plantation. There's nothing I can tell you that can guarantee that that won't happen to you. It could happen to me. They could run up in here right now and take me away for some made up crime or what have you, or because they don't like the words that are coming out of my mouth. So there's no guarantee, but there are precautions that you can take to reduce the chances that you will become a new slave behind these enemy lines of USA Inc. So with that stated, with the weekend coming up, lots of slave catching goes on. They set up roadblocks and what have you. If you got to be out there, make sure everything legit. Make sure your inspection stickers are up to date. Make sure your registration is up to date. Make sure your blinkers work. Make sure you have all your paperwork or what have you, in case the slave patrollers pull you over and demand to see your papers. Make sure all your papers, your freedom papers, are in order so that they don't start the process of returning you to a state of slavery. With that said, be safe out there. Peace and blessings to all.